Good afternoon, good evening, I'm not sure which it is yet, I'm exhausted. So, great to see so many of you, thanks for coming. My name's Josh Twist, I'm a program manager on the Azure Mobile Services team. Who saw my session at the end of yesterday, at 3 o'clock yesterday? So just over half of you, great, okay. So today's session will cover some similar ground, but yesterday's session was kind of, I think of it as more inspiration, like let's have some fun, let's build an app. Let's see what this thing can do. Today's session will be a little bit more education. We'll go through some of the features, go into some of the details. And whereas yesterday we really focused on Windows Phone as a client, in this session we're going to focus much more on Windows 8 as a client application with Windows Azure Mobile Services. But we'll do a little bit of Windows Phone at the end just to kind of show that off. So who saw the keynote on day two? Everybody, hopefully everybody, unless a few of you didn't make it up in the morning. I saw hands not coming up there. And who saw the mobile services section? And I think you guys are liking it, then you come for more, right? Cool, great, that's what we want to hear. Awesome. Awesome. And the session, note, is called Fun Number 31. So we'll try and live up to that if we can at all. Okay, so I've said this a lot now. So the best apps are, anyone who guesses the word that comes next wins a T-shirt. This guy said it loudest. I don't know if he said it first, but he gets a T-shirt. So the best apps are connected, and we genuinely believe this. And I think you can create more engaging experiences if you understand your user's identity through authentication. Can create experiences that span devices, that span users even. So you can create social scenarios. And to do that, you need structured storage, and we make all of this very easy with mobile services. And what's more, we make it easy to send push notifications. And we'll show some of that in action again today. And we do that with my favorite feature of mobile services, which is the ability to have code that executes securely on the server. But the great thing about that code is that it's the code you want to write. It's the code that is implementing the logic you're interested in and not gluing together lots of infrastructure. Let me tell you a little bit of the background of mobile services. So we actually launched the project. The whole idea was conceived about a year ago now. And we were doing a lot of research at that time into the mobile space with a simple goal of how do we make Windows Azure even more compelling for mobile developers, for people building apps for Windows Phone, for iOS, for Android, etc. And so we went out, we went to hackathons, and we coded through the night with these guys, and we surveyed the Windows Phone developer communities. We got in the car and met with businesses that are building apps, startups, enterprises, and just trying to get into the mindset of all these people. And as we were talking to them, we're asking them about cloud services. What cloud services do you need? Do you have cloud services in your application now? Are you using Azure? If not, why not? And we found that three kind of themes or three personas, as we think of them, started to emerge. Every time we chatted to a group or an individual, they clearly fell into one of these categories. And so I want to walk you through the personas. So the first one is this little chap here. And I bet some of you fall into this category as well. And that is the hobbyist app developer. So who here has a job which doesn't involve building apps, but you're either going to or you already are building apps that you'd like to make coffee money out of, Or maybe you want to be the next Instagram and send for a billion, Well, no hands. A couple of hands have gone up there. Yeah, I'm in that category. If any of you guys are going to do that, hire me. Okay, so that's the hobbyist developer. Now, as we talked to this guy, what we found is he has limited resources. He has limited time. He maybe has a family, so he only has so much time he can spend building this app. So when we asked him about cloud service features, he wanted them. He wants auth, structured storage, push notifications. He wants all of those things. But maybe he didn't have the time to go and learn Windows Azure. He didn't have the time to go and build those. So he prioritized the client. A funny story about this is, as I started telling this story internally inside Microsoft, I was chatting to one of my friends who works on the Windows Azure team. You don't get any more back-end developer than someone who works in Azure, right, and sort of the core fabric. And he says, oh, I've got an app, and I haven't added any cloud services because, I'm just going to... It takes time, doesn't it? And I have to have a client, so I'm going to build that first. And I'm like, huh. There's definitely a thing here. If people on my team are saying that it's going to take too long to add this, given the small amount of time they've got. And Azure is awesome. It's incredibly powerful. But there is a lot to learn, right? There's a lot of stuff to glue together and so on. And you can do anything with it, but can we make it easier? The next category is actually pretty similar to the first category. But the main differentiator is that this person has quit their job to build apps. They do this for a living. It's their livelihood. It's how they pay their mortgage. Anyone here who thinks they fall into that category? You build apps, and that's how you make a living. So quite a few. Okay. So these people, typically we found, worked at startups at the moment. You know, it might be one person in a garage or 10 people in a loft in San Francisco. How many people who put their hands up then are working in a startup or are a startup? Just one guy. Two. Okay. Hello. so you got, are the other people enterprise devs or? Okay, cool. Cool. This is quite an interesting audience. Great. Okay. Oh, consultants, right, is another good point. So these guys are client focused. Now, when we asked these guys about cloud services, we got an interesting response. What we found with this audience is they were super focused on building an amazing client experience. It just had to be awesome. You know, they were very, very focused on that. And if they had four people in their team, they were definitely going to have 3.5 of them working on the client and the other half guy perhaps doing the back end stuff. You know, they were going to cut those features because this thing had to rock, and that was the first and foremost thing. But they realized, I think they realized actually, that they really needed cloud services to make their app that 5-star experience, to make it reach the next level. So we knew we had something here that we wanted to improve the experience for these guys. And then the third persona that we found was this guy. Do you know who he is? Yeah. Like, so the sort of the veteran back-end developer who's built websites for years, very happy building back-ends, not worried about learning new back-end technologies, happy splitting JWT tokens and parsing SWOT tokens and all that stuff, right? And so we found that, you know, if these guys usually started with a service and then added a client application, they usually went the other way. You know, they were perhaps adding apps to be companion apps for existing web services they already had. So originally, when we kicked off the project, we focused on the first two categories entirely. But then something weird started happening. A lot of these guys, a lot of the goos were going, oh, I want to use that as well, because it just saves me so much time. It's like, you know, I don't have to go and glue all this infrastructure together. So we'll talk a little bit about that more. So let's have a quick show of hands then. Who's hobbyist? Client-focused dev? Back-end dev? Well, there's a nice split, maybe favoring back-end. So you guys are here to save time as well, right? I guess that's why you're here. You don't want to spend time writing infrastructure code. You want that stuff pulled together. Awesome. So, yeah, we very much now think of all three personas when we're building mobile services, which wasn't where we started. So you may know that the project when we kicked it off was called Zumo. It was our code name, which I love. And there's no real great story, though, other than the ZU is from Azure and the MO is from mobile. And we coined this saying that we want to take people from zero to Zumo. I'm the king of cheese, what can I say? In under 5 minutes. And one of the ways we do that is with our quick start. So who here has been to Building 92 and has been given a toy car for taking the quick start challenge? Well, I'm glad not so many of you have. And the rest of you should go and get a toy car and do this, because it takes no time at all. So I expect to see you over in Building 92 tomorrow. Let me show you what it looks like to go from zero to Zumo. So let's switch over to my machine. And here we are in the mobile services portal. And what we're going to do now is create a new mobile service from scratch. So I say new, compute is over here. It's collapsing because I've zoomed in so much. Mobile service, create, and I enter the name of my mobile service. Let's call this build demo. Let's see if that's free. You can see it's checking. It is. And I get two options, use an existing SQL database or create a new one. And this guide will actually create the database for me. So if you're not familiar with back-end development, and let me stop there, actually. There was a guy who came over to me at the start of this session called Puneet. Does that say your name right? Where is he? Here he is. And he says, now, I'm not a traditional back-end dev. Do I have to go and learn all about Azure to use this stuff? And so I've just explained that you're probably falling either into our hobbyist or our client-focused developer category. So absolutely not. Our goal is to try and abstract a lot of that away. You have the power if you want to. So that SQL database is yours, but you'll see today I don't open SQL Management Studio. I'm going to do everything here in the portal. But if you're a SQL nut, then you can totally hook up to that SQL database, start running joins and queries and reporting, do whatever you like with it. It's your SQL database. So one of the themes we have in the mobile services team is simplicity with enablement. And that means, like, we want to make it so it's super, super easy to hit the main scenarios. And for those scenarios that don't fall within those cones, you can go and do it anyway. There's other routes. We don't close the gate on you. So I'm going to hook up to an existing database because I already have one. And I'm just going to type in my credentials for this database. save that. So if I'd have created a new database, it would have asked me to create some credentials. Now, this is actually creating the mobile service right now. And I think 95% of mobile services create in about 6 or 7 seconds. The provisioning's pretty quick. At the moment, we're seeing a boosted load thanks to the keynote and all the sessions we've done. So it's going to take a little bit longer. But this is doing a lot of stuff, right? This is creating an isolated runtime that's going to host your mobile service. It's connecting to that SQL Server database. It's creating a schema in it. It's also creating a user that has least privileges. We don't want to be connecting our runtime to your server with admin privileges, so we're going to set up some stuff inside that SQL DB for you. And it's also going to create a DNS entry so that you have a URL. And that's finished. I think that was probably about 20 seconds. That thing's live in Azure now. You know, none of this sort of 30 minutes waiting to deploy stuff. It's bang, it's live already. So most of us can wait 20 seconds. And then I can click on the name of this thing, and I'm greeted by the quick start, which is the quick start challenge I was talking about a few seconds ago. And you'll notice we have support for multiple platforms here. We're going to do Windows Store today. And you have two options. Now, in both of my sessions previously, in the keynote and in the other session, I showed how to connect existing apps. Let's have a bit of fun with the creating a new app and go from zero to Zoomo very, very quickly. So there are three steps I need to take. Number one is to have the tools. So you need Visual Studio to build your Windows 8 app, of course. You need the Mobile Services SDK installed. You can get that by clicking here. I've already got that. And then I need to create a table. Now, to make the quick start even easier, we've put a button right here for you that's going to create that table for you. What the quick start does is helps you build a little to-do application. It's the modern equivalent of Hello World, right, the to-do app. And this will help us build one in no time. So in order to store our to-do items, we need a table. Notice it says here we've created the to-do item table for you. And now I can download and run my application, and I get a choice of languages. So I can build it in. I can download it in C# or JavaScript. And this isn't just a template or a sample. This is going to be personalized. This app is going to be pre-equipped with the Bootstrap code to point to this mobile service. So I'm going to pick JavaScript. I'm going to download that. Who's a C# dev? Who's a JavaScript dev? So I've done all of my sessions so far in C#. So today I was going to do JavaScript. Are you guys okay seeing a bit of JavaScript? The C# equivalent is very similar. Oh, some shaking heads. I'm a little bit nervous now because there's a lot of people that are ganging up on us. You saw that, right? Let's see. I could probably flip mentally and just write C# instead. So now I've downloaded my project. I can open that up. And let's just unpack that. So I just need to extract it somewhere, make sure I put it in a unique place. And that'll open up in Visual Studio. And if we take a look in the code, you'll see that this is pre-configured to point to my mobile service. It has the URL and the application key built into it. So it's good to go. So I'm ready to start using this app. And it's a really great place to start learning. Download this. Every time I start a new project now in mobile services, I want to go and learn something, I go to the quick start, I download the app, and I start playing with it, and I start tinkering away. And it gets me going really quickly. Now, what's this going to do is when I enter some data into this first column here, it's going to create a new item, insert it into the mobile service. It's going to make its way back to the SQL database. That'll be saved. Then it's going to come back, send me the response all the way back to the client. And once that's happened, it'll appear on the list over here on the right. So I'm going to say, hello, build peeps. Let's save that. And this should happen pretty quickly. So there we go. Now, that did a whole bunch of stuff, though. You saw how quick that was. It brought the runtime to life. It inserted into SQL. It got an ID back. And it performed something called dynamic schematization. So let me show you the data tab, just to prove you that that's now safely stored away in Azure. There you go. So you can see our data's already up there, nice and safe, in a SQL database. What we did, though, was we hit that table, and mobile services saw that you were trying to insert an object that had some properties that didn't exist, that didn't have columns for it. And so it dynamically added those columns for you. And I explained this in my session yesterday. Really, this is about trying to make the development experience as fun and as friction-free as possible. So it's, in some ways, it behaves similar to a NoSQL database, but with all the power of SQL. So you can do your reporting, your relational, your backup, etc., all very easy with the power of SQL database. But you don't have to do this upfront data modeling stage. Let me show you how, just how well that works. So I'm going to switch over to the project here. I'll show you the code that performs the insert. So here is the code that's doing an insert. This is with C#, you can use await, so you get all the async goodness, so you can do everything in line. Here it's super easy. I create a table by saying var to-do table equals client.getTable, and I specify the table I want to work with. And then I call to-do-table.insert, and I'm passing in the item that I'm inserting. Now, one of the nice things about working with JavaScript on the client, actually, is that you just work with JSON. You just work with JavaScript types, so there's no need to pre-create types. It means you can have a bit more fun in terms of rapidly changing stuff. So let me just prove that to you. We're going to add a property to this, to-do-item.something equals new date. Okay, and that's going to add a property to that object I'm about to insert into Azure. So let's run this again. Oops. Let's insert something else. I'm just going to say insert foo. Let's save it. There we go. That's in the database. Switch over to the portal. Let's refresh the view and notice we now have a new column with a date time type attached to it. So it's that easy to start adding data. Now, those of you, start adding columns, those of you who saw the keynote, I think most of you, will have also seen that we have this really cool feature called scripts that allow you to execute scripts on the server. And that's another place where you can do dynamic schematization. So I'm going to add a script here that's going to insert a column property as the item, just before the item hits the database. So let's say item dot, what should we call this one, bar, equals hello build peeps again. So what's happening here is there's an insert function that's going to be executed before the mobile service hits the database. It's passed three parameters: the item that's being inserted, the user that's inserting the object, and that I trust as verified. Now in this case, that user object would just have a level property that says this is an anonymous user because I have not logged in yet. And the request object that allows me to control the flow of execution. And here, on the server side, I'm adding a property called bar. So let's save that. Let's go back to my demo. Let's add another item here. Let's save that. That's gone over to the server. If I now go and look at the data in here, notice we have yet another column now that's been added by the server script. Now, there's so much cool stuff going on here. So let me show you this again in flight. So I'm going to go back to my JavaScript. And I'm going to put a stop here. So this thing, for the few C# people in the room, is called a WinJS promise. And it's the way these guys do their async code. You know, you specify a continuation. So it's similar to what happens after an await, say. And so this code here will break after the item's being inserted. So let me insert another item. Type in some nonsense. And what I want you to see here is that the to-do item object that's here, you guys can see this. Let me zoom in a little bit. This to-do item that was inserted has now been augmented on the client. So look, it has a bar property. Now, we added that on the server, but we've automatically propagated that all the way back to the client for you. We've also sent back the ID. So the original object has been changed. Just makes it so easy to work with data. It's really, really nice. It's so much fun building your data solutions in mobile services. Okay. So you guys get the idea behind dynamic schematization. It's all about fun. It's all about friction-free development, getting going. But of course, the smart and, you know, or malicious amongst you are thinking, hey, I could have fun with that. If someone went to production, I could start adding columns willy-nilly to people's databases if I know they're on mobile services. Well, of course, we have an option to disable that. So you can just go to the Configure tab, and you can actually turn off dynamic schema, and it will reject any requests automatically that are trying to add a new property. Now, we better turn that back on, because I might be doing some more of that soon. Okay, so let me switch back to my slides very quickly. So what do you guys think? You like dynamic schematization? Oh, I didn't mean that. Thank you. I never asked for applause. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Okay, so are my slides up? Yeah, awesome. Now, when we were asking people about the mobile the features they wanted in their cloud services, there was a few key themes that were emerging. They wanted identity support for authentication. They wanted to be able to authenticate and understand a user's identity. They wanted storage. They wanted structured storage, not just random files or settings. They need to be able to run queries. Most of you guys in here have built complex apps. I have no doubt about it. And you know you need structured storage to do that. Messaging. They wanted messaging capabilities to do push notifications and more. And then you look at Azure and you say, well, this it does all of these things. It already has all of these features. So why does mobile services exist? Well, mobile services is really about going the last mile. It is a thin veneer across these services that tries to integrate them to be more than the sum of their parts. It is absolutely not a replacement for those services. It sits alongside them. And one of the key things we've done with mobile services is tried to make it possible to compose with other elements of Azure. So from scripts, you can call out and make calls to other Azure services. We actually have, so the reason that we write JavaScript on the server is that we're running in Node.js. And we have our Node.js Azure SDK available, so it's pretty easy to call service bus or call table storage or blob storage, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing is, Azure has a bunch of other services that are really, really interesting, such as table storage and blob storage, service bus, media services. And what you'll see happen over time is mobile services veneer will continue to grow and cover those services. So we're going to make it just as easy, for example, to work with blobs. So these scenarios are a single line of code to start uploading blobs. There are ways of doing it today, but it's going to get even easier in the future. So let's have another look at authentication. This time, I've been doing a lot of Twitter demos. This time, let's use some Facebook. And let's actually start from scratch. And let me show you what that looks like. So I want my users for my little to-do list. I'm going to take this to-do list app and make it kind of much more serious today. So I want my users for my to-do list to sign in via Facebook. So you guys will be familiar with developers.facebook.com, I guess. Anyone unfamiliar with this? Nope, great. So you can come in here and create new applications. I'm going to create a new app for the app I've just created there called Build Demo. So I'm signed in to developers.facebook.com with my Facebook account. Oh, thank you. Sorry, yeah. So I'm now creating an app. And this is the hardest part of the demo, is I have to interpret the capture. So I think that's 9SA. What is that? Is that an E? Let's give it a go. I think I did it wrong. Hey, oh, no, what happened? I think, oh. Come on, face, there we go. It did create it. I don't know what happened there. That is not my fault, anyway. For once, a demo fails, not me. Build demo. Okay, so now I have my app created. Let's drill into this. Let's edit it. And what I'm going to need to do is set the URL that the OAuth flow will use to log in. So I just go and get that from my mobile service. There's a couple of places you can grab it from. You can grab it from our quick start. If you come down here, you'll see we have the URL right here. Or on our homepage. So right here, you have the URL. So I'm just going to copy that shortcut, paste it into Facebook, save that. And I'm now almost done with Facebook sign-in. The last thing I have to do is just configure my mobile service with the secrets so it can have a communication, you know, it can have a chat with Facebook. So I drill into this here, click Identity, and then I need to populate these fields here. So App ID, API Key, and App Secret. And these are here, so I'm just going to copy this over. I hope you guys aren't copying these and abusing my Facebook account. Okay, so save that. I'll have to reset them. Save that. And my app is literally, the service is now prepped and ready to use Facebook. So that's just saving. It should just take a few seconds. Okay, so let's add the code to our client. Now, we're going to do this down here. So this is the method that's called that actually originally loads the items. So this is where I want to put my code that's going to call login. So you saw in the keynote, you saw in my session yesterday if you attended that the C# code for this goes await app.mobileservice.loginasync, and I specify the provider I want, so Facebook in this case. In JavaScript, it's pretty easy, so I'm just going to copy this code out. So I'm just going to copy this code out. We're going to create a new function called login. For login equals function. I'm actually trying to do some sort of best practice for you here today, so we're going to take a little bit more time over each of these things. If I just call login once, what happens if the guy presses cancel? then he'll enter the app. I don't want him to do that, right? I want him to sort of go back and say, wait a minute, no, you've got to log in to use this app. So let's do that. Let's actually implement a loop here. So function, new function. And inside that function, what I'm going to do is called client. So that's my mobile service client instance. Dot login, and I specify the provider I want, Facebook. And then I have the promise that's going to be called on success or on error. So the first function I pass in is the success. And what that actually gets passed is the user. I won't be doing anything with it. And the second function I pass in is the error function. So if something went wrong or the user cancelled, then that's what's going to be invoked. Now, if the user cancelled, I want to say, well, no, you can't do that. You've got to log in. So I'm going to send him a little pop-up. So new windows.ui. I wish I could have alerts back, don't you? New windows.popups.message dialog. Let's do it in the tone of Mr. T. And let's give it a title. And then we call show async on that. And then done. Function. You've got to love nesting functions in JavaScript. So what I hope is the C-sharp guys can all just sit here and snigger. I wouldn't be doing that. But the JavaScript guys are going, yeah, but you guys are going to be writing types. I'm too busy inserting my data. Okay, and so in there, then, I'm going to call login again. So that'll create this asynchronous loop. Make sense? Okay. And inside here, what I want to do is say, refresh to-do items, because this guy successfully logged in. So let's run this now. That should show me the UI automatically. Here it comes. Oh, no, yeah. Do you know what you have to do? You have to actually start the thing off by calling login. So there you go. T-shirt prizes for people who spot my mistakes. Anyone who was at my session yesterday saw I had some awesome code reviewers. So there we go. He's trying to log me into Facebook. I'm going to log in as my Uncle Derek. Let me copy that. And this is now aware of my identity in the service. It's saying, hey, do you want to let this app use your Facebook? Sure, I'm happy with that. And he's now signed in. So now what I can do actually is set my service table to be authenticated. So if I go back here to my data and into the to-do items, I want to restrict access. Now, I don't want anyone working with the data inside this table unless they're authenticated. I can do that just by setting policy. So only authenticated users, only authenticated users, and only authenticated users. Now, there's a couple of things, though. That really gives you a very primitive level of security. It says people have to be signed in, but once they're signed in, they can do anything with anyone's data. So we need to start locking this down. So let's make this application actually do something interesting with security. And the first thing we need to do is to tag the items that are being inserted with the ID of the user. So I showed this in the keynote. What's really critical is I could, here in code, whenever an item is being inserted in my client app, I could say this, todoItem.userID equals client.currentUser.userID. But there's a problem with that. I'm trusting the client to tell me who he is. I should never trust something that comes in as the payload. I should only trust the authenticated user object. And we can do that really easily. So I'm not going to do that. That's bad practice. What I'm going to do is go back to my service. Oops, that's Facebook. And add some more script. So in here, let's get rid of this nonsense. I'm going to say item.userID equals, and I'm going to take the user ID off the user object. That user object is populated by mobile services, so you can trust it. You know that the person, the user ID that represents, is coming from a user that at least has the credentials of that person, right? You can be pretty sure it's the person it says it is. So, user ID. So now I know that I can trust that value inside my database. So I'm going to save that. And again, thanks to the dynamic schematization, that will just get added the next time I add an item. So let's have a look at this. Test. Let's save it. There we go. Switch back to the portal to have a look at the data. You'll see we now have a user ID column. And this data, only this row is tagged with my specific user ID. Another cool thing I want to show you is you're probably wondering, how do you know what's going on? How do you know when there's errors? How do you know what's in that user object, Josh? How do you know what's going on inside that script? And one cool thing you can do is you can actually log stuff out. So let me switch to our script view again, and let me show you what's inside that user object. So I can say console.log user. You can actually just specify an object, and we'll JSONify that, or JSON stringify it for you, in the log. So let me save this. And let's go back. Let's insert that item again. And then switch out here. You'll see we have this logs tab. And over here, we now have the details of what's inside that user object. And you can do console.warn, console.error. And we have been incredibly careful when we've written all of the APIs in script to try and catch everything you guys might do wrong. And we log that out as an error. So, for example, when I show push notifications later, when we send a push notification, if we get an error back from WNS or you do something wacky in the code, we'll log an error out into that table. So you go in, you check that, you have a look here, you'll know what's going on. So you get monitoring at a logging level inside the service for free. Now, just to explain this to you very quickly, I'll zoom in for you. There's a user ID, which is this unique string, tells you also a hint where the ID came from originally. The level is authenticated. That might be anonymous if it was an anonymous user. And it would be admin if someone hit it with the master key. So the master key is one of the things we add to allow you to do composition scenarios. If you have another back-end service, you want to talk to mobile services HTTP API, you can specify the master key, and then that thing has full control over the mobile service. This last thing here is a function called getIdentities. Let me very quickly show you what's inside that, because it's worth calling out. So I'm going to go back to my script. So let's console.log user.getIdentities. Save that. Insert another item. There we go. Back to the logs. Actually, one tip, let me share an actual tip with you. When you're working on this, you don't want to keep going backwards and forwards like this. So what I normally do is control-click this button to open up a new tab. And on this tab, I have my logs. You can see that there. And on this tab, I have my script, et cetera, et cetera. We're actually going to make it much easier soon so that you can actually get the logs right here. And we do already have a very convenient thing. If you're going through your logs and you're seeing errors, you can click on this. It'll take you straight to the script that caused the problem. Okay, so let's have a look what's inside there. Notice now in my identities is an object that says Facebook. The user ID was this, and here's your access token. So you can use that to call the Facebook API, and depending on what permissions you've got, etc., you can then start posting on the wall or finding out details about that particular user. Okay, so enough about authentication. Let's start doing some more script fun. So we've said that we know the user ID that's being inserted on the item, but now the problem is, technically, when I open up my application, I shouldn't be able to see this data here, right? These first four lines, because that user ID isn't me. So we need a way to restrict the records that come back to the user based on the policies that we decide. And that's very, very easy with mobile services. This is a key scenario for us. So I'm going to go to the script, and I'm going to change the read script. And what it's going to do is it's going to augment the query. So the first parameter here that's passed in is the query object. And I can actually add a predicate to that. So I'm going to modify it by saying query.where. And you can specify queries either using our JavaScript link. We have this link.js, which is very much like link in C#. Or you can do objects by example. So find me objects that look like. And in this case, I only want objects where the user ID is equal to the user.userID. So I've augmented the original query, and then I say, now go ahead and execute the request. So all the other parts of the query are still intact. So if he says, you know, give me to-do items, whether complete or whether false, that's fine. And then we add a predicate that says only return records for that user ID. So I'm going to save that, and then without changing the client, I'm going to refresh this, and we should lose some of these items. And there we go. So now we can only see data that belongs to this particular user, which is pretty nice. So it's a very useful thing to build out your secure scenarios. Okay, so what's up next? So I've shown you logs. Let's talk about notifications next. How are we doing for time? So in yesterday's session, I showed how to send push notifications. And I showed how you create a channel table. And I mentioned that we'd go into that in some more detail today for Windows notification services. And what we need to do, so who's familiar with Windows notification services and how it works? So not an awful lot of people. So with Windows notification services, you can send push notifications to your clients, to your client applications, even when they're not using their application. Right, so you can get a toast, or you can get live tiles that pop up on the live tile screen. It's one of my favorite things about Windows, actually. It's really nice. You can also send raw notifications when they are using the application, which I talked about in some detail in yesterday's session, if you want to see that. But in order to do that, when the application starts up, you have to ask it for a channel URL. And you have to know about that in order to send a push notification. So you need to store it somewhere in the cloud. So your application comes to life, you ask for a channel URL, you store it somewhere in the cloud, and then that cloud service can use that channel URL to send out push notifications. And so there's a great place to store channels, mobile services. So let's go and do that now. Let's go and add a table that's going to store the channel URLs that we get from our application here. Now, one of the great things is the APIs I'm using here in JavaScript are mostly Windows RT projected APIs, so they're exactly the same or very similar in C#. So let's create that table to store channels. And I want to be sensitive here, so I only want authenticated users to insert data. I don't want anyone reading this stuff apart from the service. So I'm actually going to lock down all of the other options. I'm a little bit too zoomed out. I can't see the bottom. There we go. Now, because we're going to tag a user ID onto each channel, guess what? I'm going to add that little piece of script that does so securely on the service. Item.userID equals user.userID. So we're almost done with that. Now, the next thing I need to do is go into my client application, acquire the channel, and send it back to the server. And now I'm going to have to talk in a little bit more detail. So I mentioned this session would be more education, slightly less inspiration than yesterday, about how to manage channels. I'm going to show you one approach here that works quite well. So let's go and get the channel from Windows Notification Services. And so I'm going to do that inside my code here just after I call refresh to do item. So the user's logged in. Once the user's logged in, now's a great time to acquire the push channel and save it into the cloud. So refresh push channel. Oh, sorry, no. Let's say register push channel. I'm going to create a function that's going to do all the work here. So the first thing I need to do is actually get my channel. And I call create push notification channel for application async. That's going to get me a channel for the primary tile. Was that a C# laugh? It's the same API. Dot done function. So here's a callback. So I'll get my channel back here. Except you can await it. You get an object back. So maybe that's a little easier. Give and take, you know. You can't win. Okay. So when that's done, I'll actually be returned a channel. And what I now need to do is just save it into my channel table. That's going to be pretty easy. So I say client.get table channels. .insert, and now I'm going to create a new object. And this is one of the cool things with JavaScript, actually, is I can just create an object here that I'm going to throw at the sky. I don't need a type for that. So let's see, what properties should we have on this? Channel URI sounds good. And I'm going to set that equal to the channel.URI that we got back. Sorry, JSON format. Now, there is a problem. So every time this application starts up, it's going to insert a channel. And that means I'm going to end up with multiple channels for the same user. So when I eventually try sending push notifications, I'll end up sending the poor guy 5 toasts. He's going to run install my app, give me no stars. We don't want to do that. So we really need to start thinking about managing channels. And yesterday I showed you part of the technique you need to do, and that's to make sure that the channels are unique. And so I did it there by identifying it via the channel and the user ID. I say, if there's already a channel and user ID in this table that look like this, then don't do the insert, okay? But then there's one thing I elided over yesterday, just due to time constraints, and that is that these channel URLs you get back actually roll. They change over time, so they're not consistent for this installation of the application. And so you need to think about that. Now, unfortunately, when it changes, the old one isn't dead. it's still alive for a while. So what you'll find is if you don't manage this problem, you'll actually end up sending multiple toasts anyway to that user. Because when you think about it, from the server, the channel URLs are completely opaque to you. They don't mean anything about devices. All you know is that there's this random string that's come from a user. He might have several devices just like you guys. You know, you guys have got your Surfaces now, et cetera, et cetera. Your desktops all running Windows 8. You've got the same app installed on all of them. So we need to start to worry about this problem. So typically, there's a couple of ways of doing this. The way I'm going to show today is that we're going to find something that identifies the installation of this piece of software on this device and send that up to the cloud. And then I know that that's unique. And so if I receive an updated channel, I'll just update the record in the database. So now I only have one channel URL for the device, and that's what we want. Does that make sense? Yeah. Actually, we learned this the hard way. Why am I getting two toasts in my app? What's going on? There's a lot to think about to do this stuff right, and today I wanted to go through some of the detail. Now, the way I'm going to do this today, there's a couple of techniques. Another technique, for example, is to generate a GUID and save that into isolated storage. And every time the app loads up, you load that GUID from isolated storage, and you lazily create it. So the first time the app comes up, you go, oh, there's no file here, so I'll create that GUID. And you always send that GUID back. That works great. In this case, actually, I'm going to use something that's built into the machine, which is the ability to load a package-specific token and use the hardware ID. So I'm just going to run through this code very, very quickly. I'll make this code available to everybody afterwards. And if I get enough emails, I'll do a C# version as well. jtwist@microsoft.com is my email. Okay, so let's go. It's a var package token. Oh, am I getting a lot of complaints for doing this in JavaScript? I thought there'd be anyway, I'm sorry. This guy's loving it. He's laughing at all the APIs. Look, get package specific token. Okay, so that's going to get me this, and this is available in C# as well. That's going to get me a package specific token. And from that, I can now extract a base64 string, which I'm going to call the installation ID. And don't worry, I'm using security and cryptography namespaces, which scares the life out of me. What am I doing here? All I'm doing is base64 encoding. It's like it should be called windows.scurry. What are you doing? Crypto. Encode to base64. And I'm going to pass in the package token.id. Okay, so that's going to get me a little string that is this base64 thing that will identify my app. So I'm going to set that as a property I send up on the channel as well. Okay, so that should work great. So let's save this. Let's run my application again. Ooh, ouch. What have I done wrong? Oh, yeah. You just have to specify null here. Sorry. This is one thing the JavaScript guys have as well. I mean, I don't know if you saw that. I love about, rock and a hard place. I love about developing on the WinJS side of things is you can actually do this refresh the Windows app, and it kind of does a really quick redeploy. It's instant. So let's log in. Oh, no, what is going on here? Let me stop it. Let's try again. Okay. Sign in. And that should, in the background now, because I don't want to bother my user with this, it should be uploading that channel URL. So let's go and take a look at my database. Okay, so there we go. You can see it, and we've got that installation ID. Now, I'm running a little bit short of time, so actually I want to do some more fun stuff before we close today. So I will post the actual scripts that I would have onto my blog and make it available to all you guys. That I would add a script now that ensures that remains unique and updates in place. I won't type it out now in front of you because we've only got 15 minutes left. And I think there's more fun to be had yet, so let's have some fun instead first. So I think the next thing to do is actually start using these channels. So I'm starting to collect my channels now, and it's time to actually start sending a push notification. Let's do that. So inside the server, what I'm going to do is send a push notification. Whenever a to-do item's inserted, I'm going to send a toast to all of that user's devices. So it's just a little reminder. I've inserted something. It's just a bit of fun. And let's go and do that over here. And I actually want to walk through the code for you, not do a big cut and paste in this instance, so you guys get to see in detail as I evolve what I'm writing. So this is the insert. I showed before that we set the user ID. Yep, so I actually attach that using that user object so I can trust it in the future. And then we call request.execute. So I mentioned that the request object is how you control the flow of execution. So you can do a bunch of things. You can say request.respond, which automatically sends the response to the user. You can say request.execute, which says go ahead and do whatever you were going to do. So were you going to do an insert? Yep, go ahead and do that and then send the response back to the user. So that's what's happening there because I say request.execute. What if I want to say, insert the data to the database, but then let me do something after you've done that, before you send the response to the user? Well, I can do that by specifying a parameter or an options object right here inside request.execute. So I say success, and that specifies a success handler that will be invoked before we send the results back to the user. In this case, I say function results. If it's a query, sorry, you call function results. This is an insert, so there will be no results. This is the thing that's being inserted. Now, this would allow me to hold up the flow, augment data that I'm about to send back to the client, anything you can think of, make requests to other services. In this case, I've saved the data. I now want to send a push notification. But push notifications are inherently unreliable. There are no guarantees from Windows Notification Services that that thing's going to get delivered. So there's no point holding up the response to the client app. I should get it back to him right away. So I'm going to call request.respond. Now, when I use request.respond, I can specify two parameters. One is the HTTP status code. I could send back a 500 if I'm feeling mean. And more Mr. T for you. You know, this should be I pity, probably, right? I'm not going to do that. I can send anything I like. So one of the things I want to impress upon you is that what's great about scripts is it's a really beautiful way to create a simple JSON HTTP API for data. So you can totally control that. And we're actually going to add a feature to mobile services soon called service operations that allows you to create arbitrary HTTP endpoints that aren't related to database tables. Right, so if you just want to have an endpoint that calls Twitter or does some other funky stuff, you'll totally be able to do that very soon. In the meantime, we actually see a lot of people creating virtual tables where they never hit the table, but we will fill that gap very soon. Now, if I call request.respond without specifying parameters, then there's a state machine in the back of this runtime here that says, well, I know what was going to happen there. This was an insert, so I'll just send back a 201 and do whatever I was supposed to do. I will send back the original canonical response. That's what I want to happen. But now, the lifetime of this isn't over. I can still do stuff. So this is where I can start to send my push notification. So what I'm going to do now is make a call from my script to the channels table. So let's grab hold of that channels table. Var ct equals tables.getTable. And one thing you'll notice is that our APIs are very consistent with the WinJS APIs. And we actually struggled. We really tried very hard to make it. If you read the JavaScript, you could probably guess what the C# looks like. So if you find a blog post in Objective-C, you'll be able to guess what the C# looks like. We've tried to make it so there's harmony across all of those APIs. So I'm going to get my table here. And then I'm going to run a query over that table. So I'm going to say ct.where, and I want to find all the channels that belong to this user. Oh, thank you. T-shirt for that man. Someone. Channels, ct.where, user ID is user.userid. So that's going to find all of this guy's channels. And then I say .read. That sort of finishes the query, makes it execute. And I specify my callback handlers. So success function results. What that's going to give me, actually we can log this out if you like, is a bunch of JSON objects in an array. And those JSON objects will have all of the properties of whatever's in the channel table. So it's going to have an installation ID, it's going to have a user ID, it's going to have a channel URI. Now, there's a couple of ways I can do this. I could actually say, you know, I'm not interested in all that other data, so just give me back the channel URI. That's like a projection in SQL. You can do that here. I'm going to do it the lazy way and actually just do this right here in memory. So I can say var channels, because I only want the channel URI property now. I'm happy with what I've got from the database. Var channels equals results.map. Map is a function that's built into JavaScript that works on arrays. It's like select in link. Map function r return r.channelURI. So channels here now is just going to be an array of channel URIs. Make sense? Okay. And then, notice how cool our editor is. So it's saying there's a problem here. It's saying, you've not used that channels variable you've created. So it's trying to help me. Okay, so let's use it. So I call push. .wns for Windows Notification Services, .send, and then there are about 28 different types of templates in Windows Notification Services for all the different styles of tiles and toasts you want. You'll learn to find the page on MSDN that describes all the differences. I have the URL committed to memory. So we're going to use a toast texto 1. And I pass in my channels array, so I can pass in a single channel URL or an array of them, and it'll automatically send out to all of those in there. And then I specify the payload. And the payload here is going to be text1 is equal to the text value of the item that was being inserted. Now, I'm almost done, except I haven't configured my application for push. So when you register your app with Windows Store, they'll give you some credentials. And you need those credentials to talk to Windows Notification Services. They don't want, you know, you for example, sending toast messages to my service, right? You need some credentials. So I've got to specify those in there. So let's go and get them. And when you register in the store, your app in the store, you'll get this stuff. And this is where they are. So here's my client secret, which is my password. This guy's now going to copy this and start sending toast notifications to my application. I'm going to go over here and back to the push tab, because this is where I configure the push credentials for my app. So I paste in the client secret, get rid of the space that sometimes appears on the end. Notice it warned me about that. And then the package SID, which is kind of the ID of the app. Let's copy this over. And there's one more thing I'm going to need to do. So I downloaded the quick start. So I'm going to have to add a special identifier so that my app identifies itself with WNS as well. Let me stop this from running. I'm going to go over to my package.apex manifest, and there's a couple of things to check. So this will catch you out. When notifications fail, they kind of fail pretty quietly. It can be tricky to debug. So bear in mind, you need to have your client secret, your package SID installed into the service. You have to make sure that you have, if you're sending toasts, that you have toast-enabled your application by setting this to yes. Now, our quick start has that set automatically, but when you do a file new app, it's set to no. So if you try your own app, this is why you will get a response from WNS that says it was dropped. So that's set right. So then I go over to packaging, and I need this package name to match the thing that Windows Store asked me to set it to. So here's mine. I'm going to copy this over. Now, if you register your app using the tools here, I can't remember where this is, actually. So there's a way of in Visual Studio of registering your app with the Windows Store. It will pre-fill these for you. Project Store. Thanks, Nick. Project Store. I'm not going to do that now, but this will actually pre-fill these fields for you. One other thing to be aware of, make sure that your publisher certificate, notice mine is CN equals test, is also equal. That's another thing that will cause it to fail. So I've got that matches up there, so that's great. Okay, so let's run this. That's all good, ready to do push. And my server code should also be ready to do push. Did I save that? I really hope I did, because I don't want to type it again. Oh, man. We've got 6 minutes left. I better get typing. Okay, so let's get rid of that first line. I need your help now to will me to do this correctly. So success, function. First thing we need to do is get the table for the channels. Equals tables dot get table channels. Oh, beautiful. Look at that. So first thing I need to do is request.respond. And then I need to say ct.where. User ID is the user current ID. Dot read. Specify my success handler. And then we want to map those results of our channels equals results dot map function r return r dot channel URI. push.wns.sendToastText01 channels for the URLs and specify the payload. It's going to be text1. That's going to be the item.text, and we should be good. Now, one thing I want to show you here, actually, that's useful to know, that shouldn't be a semicolon, is you can also specify a success object, a success handler. And it's pretty handy to set this to your console.log. Now, we don't do that by default, but we do log your errors for you. So if you get an error from this, we'll log it. But it's useful to look at success as well sometimes. So if it goes wrong for me now, I'll see that I've got a success code, but WNS says, well, actually, we dropped that notification for some reason. We don't error if the device has disappeared. We error if you do something wrong. OK, so let's save that. Let's actually press save this time. And then what I want to do is actually go and insert an item. And if the heavens are with us, I log in, it loads my data. And I get a push notification from Windows Notification Services. So let's have a bit of fun then to close. Things ran a little bit longer than I hoped, actually. So and that was a bit stressful. Let's see if in the last 4 minutes we can do something a little bit more fun with push. How about we integrate with another service? We go and get an image, and we update a live tile instead by calling Bing Image Search that finds an image that matches the item I just inserted and sends that as a live tile. Let's make this happen, right? Come on. Okay, so I've pre-baked quite a bit of this code, so but it can still go very wrong. And also, bear in mind the inherent risk here, that this is really going to call Bing to find images, and it's going to show on screen. So we will do nothing in poor taste. So let's move very, very quickly now. So I need to go to my to-do item. I go to the script. I go to insert. Here's the script I created. Now, I've written up how to do this on my blog, so you guys can go and see that. I'm going to replace this script here. Okay, and notice that when we call here, we do a request via HTTP to the Azure Data Market for Bing images, essentially. So this is going to do a search for Bing images. And then it's going to send that as a live tile. Where do we send the tile? Send tile square image is where that image is going. So let's save that. Now, I've made it defensive. If Bing, I've set it to adult, is let's not return any adult content, please. So although it can still go wrong, right? So in some cases, Bing doesn't return me any results. In that case, we won't get a tile. So I may have to try a few different terms, depending how Bing felt about what I searched for. So that's now live. So if we go back to our start screen here, and I move my build demo app, let's move it all the way over here so we can see this. What I now want to do is, in 2 minutes, is get a Windows Phone app ready. So let's go to our quick start. Let's go to Windows Phone 8. And I don't need to create a table. I've already got one. So I'm going to download a Windows Phone 8 project. And let's extract that. Let's put it somewhere safe. Phone 2. And that'll open up. There we go. Let's open this in Visual Studio. OK. Now, the only thing is I've made my service secure. So this quick start would just work, except I've locked down my service. So I now need to add the login code to my phone. So notice this is, you C-sharp guys are happy now, right? Look, XAML and C-sharp, right? We get to write some C-sharp code. And I'm going to go into main page, and we're just going to change a few things very quickly here. So normally we refresh the to-do items in here. We're not going to do that now, because that isn't the way that we do login here. So I'm going to move up to the top, and I'm going to say when this is loaded, this.loaded plus equals new event. Let's say refresh. Oops. Or did I copy that out then? Nope, that's great. And if app.mobileservice.currentuser equals null, then let's log in. App.await app.mobileservice. Oh, I need to make it async, that's right. App.mobileservice.login async. We're going to log in with Facebook, because that's the one we've set up. Let me just check I've got everything right there. I think that's good. We call refresh to do items. Well, it should be, but I'm saving time. So this guy's absolutely right. I should do the same trick I did before, but we now have 35 seconds, so I really better just get this thing running. So let's start this deploying to the device, which is probably going to eat my 35 seconds. And let's switch over to the Wolf Vision. And here we can see it's deploying away now over to my device. Doesn't it know I'm in a rush? It's ready, it's ready. Here we go. It's going to ask me to log in. I'm going to hide this from you guys. I don't want you logging in as my Uncle Derek. Derek. And I'm now going to read it out because I'm silly like that. So that should log me in. That should log me in. Don't let this one. My demo at the end is today failed. Okay, there we go. Look, we're getting the data from the service that is our actual data. And this thing works, and it's saving things. So now let's switch back, and let's all cross our fingers and hope that when I add an item into this to-do list, we get a live tile here that is the image I inserted. So would you like to propose something that is a single word and that is clean? Like some fruit or something you'd put on a shopping list or something, you know? I'm going to go for a poppy. Oh, there you go. And on that note, I'm a minute 15 over. It's been a blast. Thanks, guys. Hang around for questions afterwards. One more thing. Who helped me get first dibs? I have a bunch of t-shirts over here. Self, but don't fall over any of the equipment, please. So who helped me out? Those guys definitely get a t-shirt. The t-shirt sizes are very small, so even though they say large, I'm almost the large, and I'm normally a small. So have your fill.